Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Sod 1 of For the Record program number 659, titled Heating It Up for Obama. This is being recorded on January 4th of the year 2009. Before we get into the main body of the broadcast, this will also exemplify why listeners should be using SpitfireList.com. It's the best source for information about anti-fascist, period. Also, I'm very happy to announce, as of January 4th, 2009, all of the archive shows and lectures are available on very usable MP3 files. So the old RFA series, now retitled AFA, Anti-Fascist Archives, are now available for download for free. And I would recommend, for example, as background to this program, the massive shows AFA 36, The Destabilization of the Soviet Union, and AFA 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. It's a massive archive, but it is there. And this broadcast also will exemplify why listeners should use the website. A number of terms that you'll need to do some research on the website to fully comprehend in the context of this broadcast. One is the virtual state. We're going to be talking about the Underground Reich, and it is what literally a Third Reich that went underground and perpetuated itself in mafia-like style. Also, an underground axis, because the fascist Japanese did the same thing. It was not an aberration. It was part of an international cartel system. There's good discussion of that on the website, and there are books you can read about it. But the virtual state was what Philip Bobbitt, a national security expert and professor at the University of Texas, used it in application to Al-Qaeda. It applies to the Underground Reich. It is a state, but it does not have formal geographical boundaries. The Underground Reich, rather, is present in many seemingly disparate elements, and we're going to talk about those disparate elements in this program. It's present in elements of the Muslim and Arab communities. It's present big time here in the United States. It's present in Europe. It is present to a smaller but a vibrant extent in Israel. It is present all over another term. It's present all over the world, but another term people are going to want to understand is the Earth Island. It's that stretch of land going from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, most of the Middle East, former Soviet Union, China, India, and Pakistan. And it has most of the world's population, most of the world's mineral resources, most of the world's oil, and right across the middle of it is a vast stretch of Muslim population. We're going to be examining aspects of the Underground Reich, and it is my considered professional opinion that the outgoing Bush administration, like Bush 1 and also the Reagan administrations, are literally extensions of the Underground Reich. And we're going to start in the Middle East, and we're going to examine the virtual state, we're going to examine economics, and we're going to travel across the Earth Island. We're going to take a look at activities not only in the Middle East, but in Georgia, some very interesting things happening there. We're going to take a look at what's going on between India and Pakistan. We're also going to take a look at some of the economic relationships between Muslim Brotherhood functionaries, such as Prince Al-Walid of Saudi Arabia, and powerful economic, political, and media forces here in the United States. We're also going to take a look at some suspicious deaths, too. So that's what's on tap. SpitfireList.com is the resource to use to flesh out your understanding. And I'm very happy to announce that with the new year, all of the archive shows, not only the massive AFA archive shows, the anti-fascist archives, formerly RFA, and also the miscellaneous archive shows, the Guns of November, and the lectures are all available for download for free. And also on the Spitfire website, very compact, usable MP3 files are available for all of the For the Record shows through 600. And those of you who have trouble with real audio, and some people have expressed difficulties, you can now download the vast majority of the For the Record series from the Spitfire website on MP3. That having been said, we're going to take a quick look at what's been going on in the Middle East. We're going to take a look at it in a somewhat different context. Very interesting reference was made in the San Jose Mercury News of December 30th of 2008. It's an article titled, "Palestinians and Israelis Bitter Over civilian toll. It's by Richard Boudreau and Ahmed Bourai of the Los Angeles Times. But skipping down, we're going to take, this is going to be our departure for an examination of the virtual state and the Earth Island. Skipping down, Hamas, whose charter calls for the Jewish state's destruction, is urging a campaign of suicide bombings in Israel. It goes on to talk about the war itself. But the Hamas charter, something we talked about in For the Record 601, is an interesting thing to review as a point of departure for our discussion. Also bear in mind that Hamas is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Also understand that one of the more powerful figures in the global economy, Prince Al-Walid of Saudi Arabia, is Muslim Brotherhood and does fundraising telethons in Saudi Arabia for Hamas. And we're going to be talking about Prince Al-Walid in a number of different contexts, media ownership, bank ownership, and various things. But remember that Al-Walid, one of the dominant players on the multinational corporate scene, is Muslim Brotherhood and does fundraising for Hamas in Saudi Arabia. What we're going to do is review from For the Record 601, the Hamas charter, because it is indicative, I think, of the difference between popular opinion and the realities of the underground Reich, a virtual state present in the Muslim and Islamic community in the form of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Hamas charter reads, "For our struggle against the Jews is extremely wide-ranging and grave, so much so that it will need all the loyal efforts we can wield to be followed by further steps and reinforced by successive battalions from the multifarious Arab and Islamic world until the enemies are defeated and Allah's victory prevails. The Prophet, prayer and peace be upon him, said, 'The time will not come until Muslims will fight the Jews and kill them, until the Jews hide behind rocks and trees, which will cry, "O Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me. Come on and kill him," unquote. The enemies have been scheming for a long time, and they have consolidated their schemes in order to achieve what they have achieved. They took advantage of key elements in unfolding events and accumulated a huge and influential material wealth, which they put to the service of implementing their dream. This wealth permitted them to take over control of the world media, such as news agencies, the press, publication houses, broadcasting, and the like. They also used this wealth to stir revolutions in various parts of the globe in order to fulfill their interests and pick the fruits. They stood behind the French and the communist revolutions, and behind most of the revolutions we hear about here and there," unquote. They, parenthetically the Jews, also used the money to establish such clandestine organizations which are spreading around the world in order to destroy societies and carry out Zionist interests. Such organizations are the Freemasons, Rotary Clubs, the Lions Clubs, B'nai B'rith, and the like. All of them are destructive spying organizations. They also used the money to take over control of the imperial estates and made them colonize many countries in order to exploit the wealth of those countries and spread their corruption therein. As regards local and world wars, it has come to pass, and no one objects, that they stood behind World War I so as to wipe out the Islamic Caliphate. They collected material gains and took control of many sources of wealth. They obtained the Balfour Declaration and established the League of Nations in order to rule the world by means of that organization. They also stood behind World War II, where they collected immense benefits from trading with war materials and prepared for the establishment of their state. They inspired the establishment of the United Nations and the Security Council to replace the League of Nations in order to rule the world by their intermediary. There was no way that war broke out anywhere. There is no way that war broke out anywhere without their fingerprints on it. Their scheme has been laid out in the protocols of the Elders of Zion, and their present conduct is the best proof of what is said there. Within the circle of the conflict with world Zionism, the Hamas regards itself as the spearhead and the avant-garde. It joins its efforts to all those who are active on the Palestinian scene, but more steps need to be taken by the Arab and Islamic peoples and Islamic associations throughout the Arab and Islamic world in order to make possible the next round with the Jews, the merchants of war, unquote. I'm reviewing this because what you're seeing here has, in and of itself, nothing to do with anything that could be properly viewed as Islamic per se, or anything really to do with Arab culture. What this is pure unadulterated, straight down the line Nazi ideology. Perhaps some of you didn't know that the Freemasons and the Rotary Clubs and the Lions Clubs were part of the International Zionist Conspiracy. Well, of course, it's drivel. Note the quoting of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. One of the points that I've tried to make over the years is that the Muslim Brotherhood, it is an Islamic fascist organization. These are Arab Muslim Nazis, plain and simple, and it is one element of the virtual state that Philip Bobbitt talked about. We're going to end up, by the way, talking some more about what's going on in the Middle East. One of the things that I want to call to people's attention, though, is the use of the media and the Nazi slash Arab slash fascist control of American media and media in a lot of the rest of the world, basically doing what Serpent's Walk talks about. That's the Nazi tract put out by the National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the American Neo-Nazi National Alliance. It talks about the Third Reich going underground and basically gaining control of the opinion-forming media. Largest media corporation in the world is AOL Time Warner, which is controlled by a minority consortium of Saudi princes led by Prince Al-Waleed. We're going to talk about Fox News later. Fox News, of course, is the media voice. It's the second largest media corporation in the world, and the second largest stockholder behind Gruppenfuhrer Murdoch himself is the self-same Prince Al-Waleed, who recently increased his stock and changed it to voting stock. He is the second largest stockholder in News Corp, the second largest media corporation in the world. By the way, Prince Al-Waleed also had tremendous sway in he's the largest stockholder in Citicorp and has huge sway here in the United States. Third largest media corporation is ABC, Disney. ABC was bought out by Capital Cities, which in the mid-80s, that was founded by William Casey, who not only handled the State Department machinations to bring the Crusade for Freedom Nazis into the United States, where they blossomed into the Nazi branch of the Republican Party. He also, William Casey of the Crusade for Freedom, also had Heinrich Rupp, a former Luftwaffe ME-262 pilot, as his personal pilot. That is the ABC branch of ABC Disney. Walt Disney himself, as discussed in For the Record at 301, Mickey Mauschwitz, was a regular attendee at American Nazi parties prior to the outbreak of World War II. And the Disney Resorts Division is heavily invested in by Prince Al-Waleed. In fact, Prince Al-Waleed, Muslim Brotherhood fundraiser for Hamas, is arguably the banner carrier, to coin a term, for the Disney Resorts Division and Disney Recreation Parks Division in Asia. It would be impossible to exaggerate the capital participation of Prince Al-Waleed in the resorts division of Disney, which is part of ABC Disney overall. Fourth largest media corporation is Bertelsmann. That was the publishing house for the SS. Its old man, Heinrich Mohn, was SS, and its house historian, Dirk Bavendam, as recently as 1998, published a book blaming the outbreak of World War II on, surprise, surprise, Jewish control of the media, U.S. imperialism, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Not too far, by the way, from the tack being taken by syndicated columnist Pat Buchanan in this country. When Pat Buchanan left as Ronald Reagan's White House media director in the mid-80s, he was replaced by a guy named Kohler, who was forced to resign when it came out that he had been in the Hitler Youth. So note the media coverage of what has taken place. We're going to go into some of the media coverage at greater length next week. My own feeling is that it's a situation that was that basically the Israelis would be damned if they did and damned if they didn't. Figures the ground campaign is going to be bloody, and ultimately, I do not think that it's going to be politically successful, militarily perhaps, but politically, I think Israel was doomed from the get-go. In fact, that was the idea. We're going to talk about that when we assess the legacy of Otto von Bolschfing next week. But note that when one sort of sifts through the hysteria, prior to the ground assault, approximately 100, give or take, Palestinian civilians had been killed. By the estimates of people on the ground, the areas that were hit were leafleted in advance, and those were in all probability largely the family members, etc., for Hamas combatants. Also bear in mind that it is a war crime to station fighters and weapons in civilian areas and use them as shields. Not only does Hamas do that as a matter of methodology, but the Hezbollah did that in the Lebanon war as well. Also note the faking of atrocities as well. This against the context, or in the context, and against the background of the book Serpent's Walk. It's why I talk about Serpent's Walk so often. We're going to come back to all of this, and we're going to begin swinging across the Earth Island. We're going to move now from the Middle East eventually to, we're going to move to what has been taking place in Pakistan and India. We're going to take a look at what is going on in Georgia. We're also going to be examining some suspicious deaths, too. And before we leave the subject of the Israeli-Arab conflict, San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, December 3rd of 2008, before the most recent outbreak of hostilities, has an article by Kevin Fagan of the Chronicle. It's called Israel Activists' Mysterious Fall in Elevator Shaft. Death of doctor looks like an accident, San Francisco police say. Well, that may be what the police say. I got my doubts. It reads in part, it was a bizarre and abrupt way to die for a man who, by all accounts, went at life full bore and was fit and agile from riding his bicycle everywhere he went. But as San Francisco police combed over the evidence Tuesday, investigators said this is what appears to have happened. Dr. Daniel J. Kleiman, an Alameda physician and one of the Bay Area's foremost pro-Israel activists, stepped into an open elevator shaft by accident last week and died. His body was found Monday by workers inspecting an elevator in the historic nine-story Sharon building at 55 New Montgomery Street, where Kleiman apparently plunged to his death November 25th. As news of the discovery filtered out Tuesday, his supporters and friends were in near disbelief that someone so dynamic could be gone. By the way, this guy was also an open, out-of-the-closet gay person as well. And turning into this, and again, I'm skeptical about the accidental death ruling here. He, meaning Kleiman, had been taking Arabic language courses in the Sharon building for 3 years, and it was last seen, investigators said, on the night of November 25th when he went there to attend a class on the seventh floor. Actually, it eventually came out that he went there after hours, and they, in order to have done what he supposedly did, he would have to have pried open the elevator doors and then stepped into an empty elevator shaft. The Krimsky here is Police Inspector Matt Krimsky. Some in Kleiman's activist community wondered Tuesday if he had been killed by someone he loudly opposed in street demonstrations over the years, but Krimsky called that possibility beyond remote, unquote. There is no indication of any foul play at this point, even though I've been getting calls from conspiracy theorists from everywhere, even someone who said they had information from a seance, unquote. Skipping down, this the Meltzer here is Faith Meltzer. Faith Meltzer, a member of SF Voice for Israel, said she will push police to investigate the matter until all chance of homicide is eliminated. It's hard for me to believe this wasn't deliberate, Meltzer said. Well, again, what ultimately the death was ruled accidental. Supposedly he went there after hours, pried open an elevator door shaft, which according to the superintendent of the building would have to have been locked, and then stepped into an empty elevator shaft and plunged seven floors to his death. Again, I'm kind of skeptical about that, and it reminds me of the Mr. DeVee O'Shea, who ran a hedge fund that was bankrupted in the Madoff affair. He supposedly took his own life and slashed his wrists with a box cutter and took sleeping pills, managed to slice himself in the bicep. That's quite a miss if you're aiming for your wrists. But anyway, then again, I'm one of those conspiracy theorists. But do note that. We're going to talk about a death that even more suspicious later on in the program. This, however, of a Bush White House information technology person who appears to have been part of the covering up of the tracks of the Bush administration. What we're going to do now is to take a look. We're going to revisit the Mumbai incident. And I want a couple of points I want to make. In For the Record 657, not on the regular broadcast, but in the description, there is information that originally the Mumbai assault was scheduled for September 27th. It then, for whatever reason, was put off until right around the Thanksgiving holiday. I would also note that whether or not there's any connection between the scheduled date of the Mumbai assault and what happened about a week later on October 4th, the brother of the founder of Lashkar-e-Taiba, which is a Muslim Brotherhood affiliate in Pakistan, was deported from the United States. And then the attack on Mumbai, originally scheduled for September 27th, was in fact realized right around the Thanksgiving holiday in the United States, when there was also reports of a threat against the subway system of the New York City, America's financial center, as Mumbai is India's financial center. I would also point out, too, that that threat, an al-Qaeda-slash-terrorist originated threat, according to the authorities, would certainly have had more resonance with people psychologically when the Mumbai assault unfolded in India at roughly the same time. Among the factors that has spurred the Israeli escalation of hostilities against Hamas was, oddly enough, something that came out of the Mumbai assault. People familiar with the facts of the Mumbai assault are aware that a rabbi and his wife, who ran a small yeshiva, a small synagogue in Mumbai, were taken prisoner and tortured and then executed. They were executed in front of their toddler son, who was found crying beside his parents' bodies with his corduroy pants drenched in blood. This played all over Israel, and that, in combination with the botching of the 06 war and with Hamas firing rockets with no discernible response, has played into the hands of the Likud party in Israel. Israel is approaching elections. Likud is the repository for the fascist element in the Zionist movement as well, and Likud has been gaining serious electoral strength behind the perceived military weakness of its potential opponents in the election. But in terms of psychological warfare, the Mumbai incident had a galvanizing effect on the sentiments of Israeli citizenry. San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, December 2nd of 2008, had an article by Mark Levy, L-A-V-I-E, of the Associated Press. It's an article that is headlined, India Blames Pakistanis and Calls for Punishment. More about that in a second, because this has had a significant effect on the war in Afghanistan. But the subheader is 2-year-old orphan heads for Israel. One of the psychosocial factors, really one of the psychological warfare factors that has driven the Israeli assault, was the fact that what I'm about to read was basically top shelf, so to speak, television news in Israel. This article reads, in part, the cries of little Moshe Holtzberg, wounded hearts Monday at a tearful memorial for his parents in India. Mommy, 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 he wailed, clutching a toy basketball while squirming in the arms of mourners at the Mumbai synagogue. Then the toddler and the caretaker who rescued him during the terrorist attacks boarded a jet, along with the bodies of his parents and 4 other Jews slain at the Chabad house, to fly to Israel, a place the curly-haired 2-year-old had never seen. The wrenching scene at the service played over and over again on Israeli television as government officials, Chabad leaders, and relatives prepared for the funerals of the victims and the future of the orphaned Moshe. Skipping down. Moshe was spirited out of Chabad house on Thursday by Sandra Samuel, a nanny who had worked at the center for years. She found him crying beside his parents' bodies, his pants drenched in their blood. Well, again, this one played all over Israel, and it inflamed sentiments. What is really interesting here is that this had a very similar effect on Israeli popular sentiment as the Al-Dura incident had on Arab and Muslim sentiment around the world, with one very significant difference, and one that has not been pointed out. It's going to get pointed out here. The Al-Dura incident, people may recall, was an incident in the Second Intifada, when a small boy and his father, supposedly caught in a crossfire between Palestinian militants and the Israeli Defense Forces, was shot and killed by IDF forces. The problem with that is that it was a staged incident, and this has been ruled by a French appellate court. A number of analysts pointed out that the directions from which the shots that supposedly killed Mohammed al-Dura, basically was inconsistent with where IDF forces were. Ultimately, some of the outtakes from that were captured. An Israeli activist named Philip Carcenti charged that the French television station that broadcast the al-Dura incident was guilty of knowingly publishing a falsified incident. He was then sued by the French journalist who presided over that, sort of a Walter Cronkite of France. After that lawsuit was initially successful, it was appealed, and a French appellate court overturned the verdict. The al-Dura incident had a huge effect. It was cited by Osama bin Laden in connection with September 11th. The Pakistani militants who killed Daniel Pearl cited the al-Dura incident in their justification. Odd, isn't it, that the Jewish-controlled news media haven't given that French appellate court verdict a lot of play? Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. You're going to have to do some looking to find that out. Sometime this year, I hope to have Philip Carcenti as a guest. But do note that and view that against the background of Serpent's Walk. Not only the faking of the al-Dura incident, another faking of alleged Israeli atrocities. And this is not to say that I hold a brief for the fascist element in the Zionist movement or for the Likud party, who are the beneficiaries of things like this. But do note the effect of psychological warfare in the precipitation of world events. I would also note, too, that one of the many aspects of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamist fascist terrorists who have manifested themselves in various parts of the world, they are very sophisticated and they are very knowledgeable about psychological warfare and geopolitics. I think even a lot of their apologists in this country view them with sort of a patronizing and, in effect, perhaps unconscious neo-colonial way. They're basically seen as a bunch of darkies, unquote. They're not seen as real equals. They're seen as sort of the noble savage, or perhaps the noble savage, but kind of ticked off by Western imperialism, blah-de-blah-de-blah. They don't really give them credit for being shrewd practitioners of psychological warfare and geopolitics, and they are. In addition to the effect on Israeli popular sentiment of the Mumbai massacre, the Mumbai massacre also had a huge effect on what is taking place vis-a-vis India and Pakistan. We're going to go into that inside, too. An article from NDTV, the Press Trust of India, Saturday of January 3rd, India compiling evidence to share with Pakistan and rest of world. As Islamabad continues to be in denial mode, India is compiling evidence about the role of Pakistan-based elements in the terror strikes for sharing it with the world besides their neighbor very soon. Please do note this. We're going to take a look inside, too, of what is taking place vis-a-vis the India-Pakistani conflict with regard to Mumbai. And all of this is taking place as Barack Obama is getting ready to become president of the United States. And we're going to be swinging from the Earth Island through. We're going to take a look at what's going on in Georgia. And we're going to swing back to the United States, and we're going to see what people like Karl Rove and Governor Blagojevich of Illinois and Fox News are doing for Obama here in the United States. Obama is definitely having it heated up for him, folks, and he had his work cut out for him before the election. Now he has really got his work cut out for him. We're going to take a look at who's doing the cutting and just how far out that is inside, too. Please use the SpitfireList.com website. It is essential for understanding terms like Earth Island and the virtual state. It'll give you the background to things like the Muslim Brotherhood and many of the things that I talk about, Serpent's Walk. I can appreciate that many of the things I talk about will sound weird, incredible, what have you. Please use SpitfireList.com. It is the best source for this kind of information. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 659, Heating It Up for Obama. This is being recorded on January 4th of 2009. My name is Dave Emery. Happy New Year.